Birdman here.
Yeah, I have a field sparrow.
You want a number?
Oh, 1409. Probably this year.
First part didn't come through, Gordon. Just a minute, I'm up to the zeros. Give me that again. 10149 is a field sparrow indeed. It was done May 8th, 2005, and I'll make a note that it returned on the 15th, and you can let it go.
10-4. It says thank you.
I'm Mike Peterson. I'm a master bander. I was raised in a small village in upstate New York, Hudson Falls, and we had a backyard that was bordered by woods, and I knew what robins were and blue jays and the more common birds, but I remember seeing a bird that looked like a robin hopping along and feeding at the edge of the woods, but inside the woods, not out on the lawn like the robin would. And it had spots on its breast. It was a very reddish-brown color. And so I went down to the Hudson Falls Library, and I got out a book called the Thornton W. Burgess Book of Birds, I think. And I looked it up, and it was a wood thrush. And I was thrilled. I could identify this bird that way. And I can't say that I became a birder at that very moment, but it was an interest that stayed with me off and on through my teen years and early adult years. And finally, when I was about 30, I began to take up birding more seriously.
I'm Gordon Howard. I have a camp in the Adirondacks and been living in South Carolina. I got into birding by being here and seeing birds in the Adirondacks. I took courses at University of North Carolina, where I was an undergraduate student in vertebrate field zoology, which was taken with a Dr. Ingalls, who was a finch specialist. And then I've just wandered into birds from there.
I started coming out here 30 years ago in 1976 to band birds during the month of May. I was sitting home on May 11th, 1976, and the phone rang. And it was a friend of mine, and Dan said, Mike, I'm down at Crown Point State Historic Site, and the hawthorns are just dripping birds. He said, there's all kinds of warblers. There's Cape May warbler, palm, bay-breasted. He said, there's some I don't even know what they are. You better get down here. And I said, I'm on my way. And before he hung up, he threw in an afterthought, and he said, oh, and by the way, you might want to bring a few mist nets with you. We'll send one right up. Gordon needs a hat at the North Net. So I threw a few nets and poles into the car as well and headed down here and came out, and he was absolutely right. The warblers were everywhere, all kinds of other species of birds. And as we started opening a few nets, down to the south of us, we could hear the chickadee-dee-dee and so forth of a band of approaching black-capped chickadees. And a minute later, they began to hit the net. Boing, 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 boing. And we went over to take them out, and the first one I started to extract was wearing a band. And so I sent in the band number and found out subsequently that it was banded down in Indiana, Pennsylvania, near the Alleghenies. And I thought, well, if one of the first birds you take out of the net is wearing somebody else's bird band, that's a pretty good place to come every year. So I've been coming back ever since. And I think now I've done somewhere in the neighborhood of 12,000, 13,000 birds during the past 30 years at Crown Point.
Started doing an atlas with Mike in 1980, and started banding in 1983. The question I had was, were the white-throated sparrows I had in my yard in South Carolina the same white-throated sparrows I have in my yard up here? And here it is 7 years later, and I still don't know. So none of my white throats have been caught anyplace else yet, or found. I'm still working on that. But through the Atlas, I found out from Mike that he came out here and banded, and I've been out here since 1984. Bad hair day.
Yeah.
I would say.
Well, that's one of the problems when you have the nets up and you get a strong, because normally this one would be hiding under the limb above it, and the rain would be hitting the limb above it, and then its feathers would shed it, but it's upside down in the net, and it struggles around and works the water into the feathers and stuff. So you have to check them pretty frequently. I have a chickadee once.
Mike is mooting everybody here.
Well, by the time he gets those things on, their brain will stop, but that's all right. Yeah, the chickadee got hypothermic once and getting wet in colder weather than this, and I put it in a sock by my wood stove, and pretty soon it was in great shape, you know. The sock was dark in color and kept it quiet, and it allowed the moisture out and the heat in and air in and stuff like that, and perked right up. It was even a clean sock.
I've been saying, you know, if it would just do these periodic showers all day long, I'd love it. Because it's probably dropping a new crop of birds down on top of our heads. You know, they were thinking, well, we'll make use of this little lull, you know, and push north. And
Susan was thinking of you.
Look at that. But the female got me last night. Oh, man, she really chopped me down. Macho man.
We're just talking about how you might let the sub-permittee do it.
I said you didn't tell me where the gloves were.
Yeah, you got me a couple times down there. Look at that, Gordon.
Oh, yeah.
The V-mark of...
The V-mark, yes.
Instead of the V of Zorro, it's...
My name's Woody Sear, and I'm 16 years old. I go to Warrensburg Central School, and I became interested in banding when my mom brought myself and some other friends here when she had heard about the banding, and I think that was when I was in first grade, and so we just kept coming back, and I really enjoyed it. And then Mike slowly taught me different things about how to band the birds, how to tell different things, and now I'm a sub-permittee of him.
When you begin as what's known as a sub-permittee under the license of another person who is called a master bander. And the sub-permittee spends an apprenticeship learning how to use mist nets, how to put them up, how to take them down, how to repair them, how to keep them in order, and how to extract birds from them. And all of the rather confused process of trying to age and sex birds, and of course, obviously, accurately identify each bird by species, regardless of its age or its sex.
Looks like a goldfinch, maybe?
Something yellow in number 3. Are we letting that one age, or?
Age?
The mist nets, MIST, are very fine nets. The opening in the net is probably about a half inch by a half inch for most of the small land bird migrants. Each net is 12 meters long and probably about 5 to 6 feet high, and it has five or perhaps six horizontal lines that we call trammel lines. And the net itself, when the wind blows, bulges or pouches out between these trammel lines, forming a pouch. And our idea is to have them fly at the net, and when they hit it, they lose their lift, the principle of flight that's keeping them airborne, and they drop, into this pocket or pouch that's formed by the net. And they just lie there very quietly in their little hammock. It looks very much like a long 12-meter hammock. And they lie there and wait for us to come and get them out of trouble.
How far down?
Oh, it's a magnolia.
Really?
Really. That's good. Number three.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it wasn't there a minute ago. Get it right now? And...
yeah, get it right now. Here you go.
Thank you.
Is this a tough one?
It shouldn't be. All right. Well, the first thing you have to figure out is which side the bird came in from. In this case, came in from this side. See the bird laying in the bottom of the net. That's what Mike calls the basic bird. Before you start trying to untangle it, you should see the basic bird just basic in the bottom of the net. Otherwise, you're going to be weaving it in the wrong direction, and it's going to get more tangled. So we start out, and normally I leave the feet until last, and the best thing to start out with is if the shoulders and the wings are tangled, is to get the net off the shoulders and the wings. And usually the only time I do the feet first is if I need more room to play with the net and more slack, which can happen sometimes. And so you just work the net over the wings, and so you can go in whatever order, but usually you go with the wings first, in general. Not all the time. But and you have to be gentle with the bird, but they are pretty flexible, so you can move things around if you need to. Okay, and this guy needs to let go so I can move some net around. And if one wing doesn't work, you can try the other wing, you can try the head. You just gotta basically try all sorts of different things to see what will get the bird out of the net.
I think the easiest to remove are the warblers and the finches, small finches like goldfinches and pine siskins, almost any of the warblers, because especially the warblers have very weak feet. So two of the points that they can get hung up on are usually not a problem. The other two points are the bend in the wing, and neither warblers nor the small finches have particularly sharp or long wings. So if the net goes over the bend in the wing, over the shoulder, it's not a big deal. And with all birds, they have heads that also get hung up. That's the fifth point. You got to get it off of that. And I tell my assistants and volunteers and sub-permittees, don't worry about each individual line when you're taking it off the bird's head. Just think of it as taking a sweater off a little kid. Just keep feeding it over the top.
And when I pull the net over the bird's head, it's usually a good idea to support the beak and the head so that you don't like pop its head off in case it gets caught in an odd way, and you just pull nice and gentle, just like Mike said, taking a sweater off a little kid. Go gently. Now I just had to get off the head, and then the net came right off the wings, and then you've just got the feet, and usually you can just pull a little bit on the feet and they'll let go, and there's the bird.
Some of them struggle and wiggle themselves in and out of the net a couple of times, but for the most part, they're very passive about the whole situation, and I think it amazes most people at how fearless the birds are when you get them in the hand, that they just kind of watch the thing and look at you, put the band on the leg, and perhaps rap at your finger with their bill, and then sit there and look at it some more, and eventually you let them go, and everybody's happy.
So now we put in a beekeeper's hat, which is what we use to store the birds until we put the band on them. That way they can move around, but they're still safe. And there we go.
As far as the ones you don't want to do, chickadees, despite their small size, are notorious among beginning banders. It's probably the bird that results in more calls on the radio of, "Birdman, I've got a chickadee in the wing net, and he's kind of hung up." Kind of hung up usually means that the person has been weaving that chickadee back and forth to try and compound the problem when I get there to extract it. But they all come out. If they went in forward, they're going to come out backward. And if you're careful enough, you can get them out without any trouble. So even chickadees will come out of a net.
I believe this one will take either a size 0, which is about the standard size band. That's the one we use the most. Or it might take something a little bit smaller than that. But I'm not totally sure. You can look it up. Usually, just to be safe, I look it up in the book. So that I use the best possible book.
Let's see.
I'm Wendy Burkowski, and I live in Bolton Landing, New York. And I, like Woody, got interested in bird banding by coming out here on the advice of a friend years ago. And my daughter and I came out and started helping Mike take the birds out of the nets. We came on a year where there was a glut of birds, and he needed the help. So we were kind of recruited in a fast hurry.
Gordon's
and we've
message.
Been coming back ever since.
Wendy's on her way. Oh no! I'm going.
They nearly made it by.
No, they were on their way back.
Oh, they were on their way back.
Oh, we missed Mike. We gotta go back. They all came in from the, all but one came in from the north side.
Well, I'll get the red start out of here first. That's a 0-8.
Yeah, I know. You're like me. You always save the worst job till last, and then it becomes more onerous.
Yeah. Okay, where'd my hammer go?
The rarest bird I banded was a version of a common yellow throat, but it was a gynandromorph, half male, half female. Had the male mask on the left, the female no mask on the right. And that is rare, but the species is not. It was right here at Crown Point.
Gordon, there was a brown thrasher in the outer swamp. I sent Woody in after it, and Susan's bringing him a hat. Yeah, we just got a brown thrasher out of one of the inner swamp nets, and every bird takes a different size band. So I'll take off one band, and it's presently closed. So I put it over a split pin on these special banding pliers and spread the band, and then turn it around so that the opened end is facing outward in the pliers. And the pliers are designed so that no matter how hard we close the band, it will still form a perfect circle around the bird's leg. It won't crush the band or make it overlap. It just makes it like a perfect bracelet. And we have to age and sex the bird. So first I'll look at the tail feathers, which are very ratty, very worn. Some of the veins and feathering on the feathers are gone. So this suggests to me a young bird. And then to substantiate that, the feathers are quite pointed toward the tips. Older birds tend to have a broad tip to the outer tail feathers, what we call truncate. This one is not. It's very pointed. It's very worn. And so this is a young or a second year bird.
All right, we have a wing of 131. Looking at the bird's wing, and we see it doesn't have much barring in the alula.
Since this brown thrasher so that makes it a second year bird. Today or very recently, it may not be in breeding condition yet, but I'll bloat apart the belly feathers and see if I can notice either a cloacal protuberance, which would indicate it's a male, or a brood patch, that is bare skin on the belly and abdomen, which would indicate a female. This is clearly a male. Yeah, see all this splotchy stuff? It's very irregular. Right there, right there. There's some up by the lores. There's a little under the chin.
Mm-hmm.
What made me suspect it was when I had it in the hand and I saw this spot right here.
Oh, okay.
See, this is a young male.
I missed it.
This one here is the one.
Oh, yeah, right.
Me off.
Yeah.
I saw that sticking out, and then I saw this spot by the bill, and I thought, oh, yeah, I've got a young male. So, okay, we've got second year male, American Red Start, and he's ready to be released. Yeah, here's another photograph from the Stokes Field Guide, a photograph, and again, much closer to my bird, including the more orange shade on the
except for one
side
thing,
of the breast,
the caption.
On the shoulder.
Oh yeah, the caption.
Female.
Female.
It's only two pictures. So
this is one gorgeous bird. Look at that blue. This is a pretty bird. Yes, you are. Oh, I know. Yeah, calm down.
No. Don't even think about it. Naughty, naughty. What are we going to do to Woody? Woody gets his master permit. Yeah.
I don't know.
We should have devised some kind of a ritual for his sub permit, you know?
Unless you could bend him.
Yeah, the master.
Blindfold him and make him do something. Blindfold him and make a chickadee, take a chickadee out of a mist net. That would work. Yeah. When I came out here, I was interested in all the beautiful little warblers. They're gorgeous. They travel vast distances between jungles and boreal forests. But the problem is there's not many Cree Indians up to the north to report them, and there's not many Indians down in the jungles to report them, and so you don't really learn much about either end. You learn about the stuff in between. Then we began learning more about the local birds, the birds that came back here year after year, and that was great fun. But as we became settled in here and our operation began to grow of its own volition, more and more visitors began to drop by, at first casually, friends, and then friends of friends, and then word of mouth, and eventually organized groups, classrooms, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, Garden Club ladies, Red Hat ladies, kids in the criminal justice system who are coming to visit a banding station instead of doing hard time, and all kinds of people who have a great interest in the whole process when they get here, but they're not interested so much in the banding. They're interested in the birds, and that's what we love to encourage. The educational aspect of this has probably become
as important as the ornithological side of things. It's more sociological as time goes on. And it's really nice to be able to see a little kid hold a bird and then let it go and watch the delight in the kid's eyes as the bird flies off and all their little friends clap, you know, and everybody's tickled by it. And it's a memory that will stick with that kid, we hope, for years to come. You know, they've had an experience with wildlife that's non-consumptive, that you don't have to shoot something or eat something in order to enjoy it, that there's an aesthetic enjoyment that you can bring to the outdoors as well. And that's what we try to encourage here. Yeah, nothing like the 15th of May, nice overnight rain, cloudy day, no wind to speak of, and we're in the bird business. Just excellent.